What do markets want to hear from the Federal Reserve? In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. The Federal Reserve, as it regularly does, is deliberating over what to do with the nation's economy. Raise interest rates, lower them, keep them the same. The president has weighed in. He wants rates to go down. And when he was asked whether the chair of the Fed, Jerome Powell, should be demoted, Trump said, "We'll see what happens." For the record, the president cannot remove the Fed chair from his position just because the president wants to. Susan Schmidt is head of U.S. equities at Aviva Investors. Good morning.
Good morning.
The Fed is wrapping up its regular meeting today. What are markets expecting? What do markets want to hear?
Well, the markets are expecting this meeting to really just be a reiteration of previous statements. The Fed is here to support the economy overall. They're here watching and acknowledging that there's concern over trade. But I don't think the markets today are expecting a rate cut. They are anticipating a rate cut, but later in the year. The biggest concern right now revolves around trade, particularly the discussions with China. That sounds as if those discussions are continuing, and it wouldn't be prudent for the Fed to make a move in advance of the G20 meeting, where we have President Trump and President Xi meeting once again. That will happen at the end of this month. But in large part, the markets are expecting status quo. Let's see what happens at the next meeting between the President of the U.S. and the President of China, and then we'll figure out what to do.
Susan Schmidt, head of U.S. equities at Aviva Investors. Thank you.
Thank you.
Public mistrust of vaccines is moving the world backward in the fight against deadly but preventable infectious diseases. This warning comes from the Wellcome Trust. It surveyed hundreds of thousands of people in 140 countries and found that trust in vaccines was lowest in places like North America and Europe, and highest in places like South Asia. My marketplace colleague, the BBC's Anu Anand, joins us to go over this. Hi, Anu.
Hi, Sabri.
Why do you think there's this disparity between parts of Europe where 50% of people don't trust vaccines are safe versus places like Bangladesh where only 5% of people mistrust vaccines?
Well, I think it's the obvious that there is more disease in places like Bangladesh. So people have very firsthand experience with what that does to their lives. And I think that that's one factor. I think bias confirmation over the internet where, you know, people aren't familiar with, say, the effects of measles and how deadly and how debilitating it can be, combined with, you know, researching the safety of vaccines and perhaps coming across unscientific information leads, ironically, to more developed, more advanced countries having a little more skepticism around the science.
These numbers, of course, are significant because you can't just say, okay, fine, well, you know, some percentage of people aren't going to get vaccinated, too bad for them.
It's absolutely significant. You're seeing measles outbreaks around the world. And, you know, there is a health cost to this. There's also a financial cost, Sabri. If you were to look at a worst case scenario, a big outbreak, the U.S. would have to spend about $4 billion to isolate, quarantine, treat, and test everyone to contain that. In contrast, vaccines for measles only cost the U.S. about $45 million. So it's a pretty straightforward cost-benefit analysis.
My marketplace colleague, the BBC's Anu Anand, thanks very much.
Thank you, Sabri.
Marketplace turns 30 this year, and to celebrate, we're going to go back to the 80s. Check out our mighty fine new thank you gifts that you can choose from when you become a Marketplace investor. Your donation, large or small, will help us keep bringing you the news and information you trust for years to come. Donate today at marketplace.org.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
Charitably minded Americans donated $427 billion last year. That is a lot, but it's actually lower than the year before, almost 2% lower if you adjust for inflation. This is according to new figures released Tuesday by Giving USA, which tracks charitable donations in the U.S. Religious groups took a hit, so did education and human service organizations. These trends have some in the evangelical Christian world rethinking how they fundraise. From Boston, Carrie Young reports.
One evangelical group called Generous Giving has been working to bring younger givers into the mix. It targets students at top-tier MBA programs and law schools by inviting them to free retreats.
Everything was paid for, including the house and the food.
That's Jason Jose. He just graduated from the Harvard Business School. He went to one of these retreats last year in New Hampshire and was surprised there were no donation pitches, just people telling stories about giving and how doing that makes them happy.
I definitely did not see generosity as something that can give joy. I think that was a big change.
Which is precisely the outcome Generous Giving is aiming for. John Cortinas is the evangelical group's chief operating officer.
So much of the narrative around generosity is one based around guilt or duty.
He explains many Christians are taught about tithing, which typically means giving at least 10% of your income to the church. But he says groups like his have realized that a feeling of obligation from church teachings only goes so far.
To really have someone propelled into a lifelong, passionate pursuit of generosity requires a different power source.
The group doesn't advise people on how much to give or where to give. It just asks people to consider giving the amount that makes them happy. David King, a professor of philanthropic studies at Indiana University, explains Generous Giving is among a small but growing number of organizations in the Christian world that are taking this more strategic approach to philanthropy.
So digging deeply into the motivations for why they give it could be extremely helpful in reclaiming the deep riches of faith traditions for charitable giving.
Recent Harvard grad Jason Jose has already begun his journey in generosity. At the end of the school year, he donated his furniture rather than selling it. And once he starts his new job, he wants to give money to several causes. He's not sure how much yet, but he says it will end up being more than 10% of his income. In Boston, I'm Carrie Young for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm Sabri Benishour with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.